Captain Bauer, Reel 5.
We were discussing patrolling. Did you ever encounter Chinese patrols when you went out?
I personally didn't, but there were always signs of activity which one had probably just missed. But certainly we had what you'd call a bump. I think it was commonly termed as a bump. And it only, I think, as far as I can remember, there was only one which ended in, as it were, pretty good disaster, because the company commander was out on a patrol, and he had taken out, he'd taken out a vast majority, because obviously you could never leave your position totally empty, but he'd taken out a very big fighting patrol, and they met Chinamen on their way back, and they just got caught, and they were shot up, and the company commander was killed. But I think that most people who went out on a, at some stage, would have come in contact one way or the other with you know, some sort of Chinese aggression. But there were very few who actually met Chinese face to face, so they had a shootout. And this was the extraordinary thing. But it did happen.
When you went out on a fighting patrol, what sort of scale would that be?
Fighting patrol would be certainly a platoon. Or as many as your platoon as you could, you know, because it's quite a lot of people. But that would be with an intention of attacking something, getting a prisoner. You know, the whole thing was about getting a prisoner, really. When you became aggressive in the role of a fighting patrol, and you would go out in that kind of strength to attack and catch a prisoner. But there again, not necessarily. There were snatch patrols designed as well. You probably had an officer and three or four, which were probably much more effective, or an NCO and three or four, that kind of thing, for a snatch. But a fighting patrol would be about platoon strength and, you know, bristling with, you know, you cobble up your Bren guns and things like that, so that your firepower would be terrific.
What would a fighting patrol do? Would it go over to the enemy line and try and break in?
Really. You'd do a sweep so that you'd probably, if you bumped anything, so you'd score by killing Chinamen or taking a prisoner. But you would melt there in aggressive form. But the whole object really would be to catch a prisoner or take a prisoner. And so, you know, that would be the sort of general idea.
By doing a sweep, do you mean you just form a sort of cordon, sweep through the ground?
Yes.
Looking for trouble?
Yes, that kind of thing. Because you're bound to cover quite a lot of ground, because you'd be quite a lot of people on the ground. Let's see, how many would you be? Platoon strength, 30, well, that's too many, isn't it? 25 people, probably, say 20. And with as many Bren guns as you could have, you'd have certainly an officer and a sergeant and then three corporals and the whole stuff. And that would be about right. But, you know, the general idea would be to either go out and bump another patrol or take a prisoner or attack anyway.
When you sent out these sweeps, did you do so on the basis of intelligence, or was it just done on the basis of expectation?
Of expectation. The next plan after that would be a very carefully planned attack, which would be done from brigade level, and that would take a lot of planning and precise, you know, probably a daylight attack, this kind of thing. Otherwise, it was left up to the battalion commander to, you know, it's all a question of dominating your ground.
How close do you think Chinese patrols got to your lines?
Quite close from time to time. It was very difficult to know. They were very good movers, and things that when you found evidence or from time to time you bumped them on the way coming in, so they'd got there. they were as pretty good at it as we were, you know, because after all, we weren't all that far apart, and it was quite easy to get within. It was probably more easily defined from their point of view, because we had our minefields marked out very carefully, and you'd come up against some barbed wire or something like that, but it wasn't quite the same with the Chinese positions. But you weren't, as I say, never far away, and I think that they were about quite a lot.
Did you ever encounter them coming back from their forward patrol positions?
Well, yes, that was probably more the case, in that you might have crossed going out, and as you came back, which was always tricky because you want to relax a bit, I think. I think that this happened, you know, going back again. But yes, I think that this was more the case. But it was, you know, I suppose you could say there was a bit of everything.
You say you've sometimes found evidence they've been really close. What would you regard as being evidence?
Difficult to be specific about that, I think. But you could tell probably how a wire had been bent. That kind of thing. It's not often that they would leave anything behind, but one was careful about leaving and watching where you'd gone and things, and there were minor signs from time to time that someone had been there.
Tracking
that kind
clues.
Of thing, or you know, that wasn't here, or you put something down when you left, you know. Nothing very obvious. They never left their equipment behind.
Did you ever mount operations to try and ambush Chinese patrols coming in on likely routes?
I knew there was another patrol in my memory bank, which is failing, was an ambush patrol. There was the what have we done? We've got the standing, the recce, and the fighting, and the ambush, indeed, was a very important. The ambush patrol would be probably section strength, very carefully planned, and you'd sit, get bloody cold, and wait, because you, precisely by definition, that you could catch the Chinese either coming in or going out. And that certainly, the ambush patrol was a very important one. It called for a lot of patience, and you used to get very cold and wait a long time. And the arrangement would be that you'd usually plan to be in your position by, you'd say, 20 minutes after you'd left your minefield gap, and then you'd plan to be back in 3 hours or something like that. And you were in touch on the radio. Hopefully, returning now, that kind of thing, or some code word. And you'd go in through a different gap, that kind of thing. But certainly you'd sit and hope to catch your fish that way from time to time. I don't think we ever had a successful ambush patrol, from what I can remember.
You mentioned earlier on about moving through terrain, about scrub. What sort of scrub was it? What sort of height would the...
The stuff round the bottom of the hills, mainly. And I can remember in one or two positions, we dug in areas where there'd been a lot of trees. Looking at the old photographs, most of them are blown away. But there were areas where there were a lot of growth, and in areas of the kind of stuff which I think wouldn't otherwise naturally have been there, because the tending of the paddy fields, the tending of the graves, and so on. And I think this was growth over a period of years, areas had been neglected. And so you had areas where there were bushes and stuff which otherwise, in the natural course of affairs, would have been not allowed to grow. That's purely my own idea. But we did have bits of scrub and that kind of stuff, but it was nothing to talk about, really.
When you went out on a patrol, how far would you reckon to go on a night's patrol, if you're doing a recce patrol, for example?
Depending on how far away you were from the enemy, recce patrol not too far. But obviously, looking at your map, looking at the ground beforehand, you would hope to go and be as useful, obviously spend as much useful time as you could, And therefore go to probably not as long as you thought it might have been, but you know, 500 or 600 yards perhaps. But that's quite a long time, long way in the dark. But depending on how far your position's away, you know, you'll find you could go quite a long time, a long way. But just depended on the line and how far you were separated from the enemy. But I suppose you could sometimes go a quarter of a mile and then come back a different way. So, you know, you've probably gone quite a long way by the time you've gone out, done your stuff and come back again.
And how long would that take you? Would it be all night?
Well, it would depend entirely. You see, you have some idea. Hold on. Some idea about how far you were going. So based on moving in the dark, and depending on what might or might not happen, you could be out for 2 or 3 hours quite easily. And it was the standing patrols and the ambush patrols, I say, that were the ones that you'd probably go out at, say, last light plus 1 hour. So you'd be moving out at about, depending on the time of the year, you could be quite easily moving out at about 7:30, 19:30 or 20:00, or and then come back at midnight. Or you might go out at midnight, come back at 3 a.m. You know, it was, and there again you had, you know, a patrol program for the whole battalion front, and you might have your program for that night could be quite extensive. You could probably have 2 recce patrols going out from A Company, and an ambush patrol going out from B Company, and a fighting patrol going out, and it had to be very carefully controlled, obviously, and everyone had to be informed who was doing what. But we were there again, I think only once did one patrol bump into another, but there was some kind of, you know, I don't know what it was. We didn't actually shoot ourselves, if you see what I mean, if you were very trigger happy, and the easiest thing in the world to ambush some of your own people, because you know, as I say, it was so easy to lose your way, and you might find that some recce patrol was coming back the wrong way, and you were dependent very much on your own senses about that kind of thing. But you would know that there was a recce patrol out at the same time, or you were very well briefed about stuff. But generally speaking, at night there was quite a lot of stuff going on in the battalion area. If it was going to be a fighting patrol, then everyone would be stood to, and you probably have any one fighting patrol going out, which made things much easier for the chap in command, you know, that kind of thing. And you know, everyone wants to be alert in case you've got to go and help them and that sort of thing. But I've lost the main question now. It was distance, wasn't it?
It was about how far you would go, how long it would take you.
Yes.
You were mentioning pheasants earlier on as being a...
Well, pheasants were...
A hazard.
They were a bit of a hazard in that they could get up unexpectedly, as they are wont to do. And if they did that at the night time, it could be quite a frightening exercise. As I say, the pheasant originated in Korea, and we had some very good shooting in reserve. But at night time, if a pheasant suddenly got up, you would be inclined to shoot at it and, you know, give your position away. And this did happen, you know, now and again. You get some fat cockbird getting up in the middle of the night, and clearly your response would be, if you weren't aware what it was at the time, you'd think it was something aggressive and loose off your stain gun or Patchett or whatever you had.
What did you normally take on these patrols? Would you take rifles, or would it be mainly light automatics and machine gun?
Looking back, it seems absurd to take a rifle now, doesn't it? But yes, one carried it. We weren't allowed to take foreign or other weapons. And there were a few about. I myself had one of the American FN rifles, which was a very light weapon to carry. It was automatic. You could stick two magazines together. But they weren't, I think, on the whole, as anything like as reliable as our own weapons. So generally speaking, you would take a Bren gun. This was, if you are out on an ambush patrol, you probably take two Bren guns. This was very much up to the company commander and the platoon commander to plan, and you talk about what you were going to do in your depositions beforehand and say, okay, if you're going to do this and that, take three Bren guns, you know. But the Sten gun was the main automatic weapon in those days. Patchett came in the middle, I suppose, and wasn't for general distribution. We tested it. But there were very few. And the officer would usually carry his revolver for what it was worth, plus a Sten gun. So you'd hope to predominance of automatic weapons, which you could cobble together. But you would also take your 303 rifle as well.
Did you take grenades?
Oh, yes. Lots of grenades, and we had the stunning grenade in those days as well, which actually, I don't know how successful they were, but I remember testing one or two stunning grenades later, and they didn't go off, you know. But the idea was that you took your stun grenade, which was the size of that loo paper roll thing, that shape, and you'd pull the pin, and it would concuss the enemy. I don't know how successful they were, but you carried those, you carried your what's it called, the ordinary grenade,
the Mills bomb,
marvellous, brilliant, absolutely super, and I don't think anything's been made to better that. They were the most effective weapon, and people would carry two, you know, on their equipment and somewhere. There were all sorts of rules about what you should and shouldn't do, obviously, with your armoury. But generally speaking, obviously, you took hand grenades with you. And they were used a lot, and you had them in your fighting pits as well, in your defensive position, and you oiled them and looked after them. There were masses of them, you know. People always throwing them about. But they were a very good, very good weapon indeed.
Did you find that anybody enjoyed going out on patrol in your
platoon? It never came my way, I must say. I don't think anybody enjoyed patrolling, quite honestly. I think you may have found that secretly one or two people. But no, I don't think people enjoyed it. It was a pretty scarifying thing to have to do. We found one or two people were shooting themselves in the feet, and this was the so-called, you know, cleaning your gun accident. And you couldn't blame some of the people. Eventually the commanding officer said, if this happens again, you know, there'll be a court-martial, even if you have blown your foot to bits. But I don't think, you know, it was the only active role that we played in a defensive position, and it was always done at night, and it was always bloody cold. There was always a threat of losing your way, and of course there was always a threat of being shot up. You know, there was nothing attractive about any form of patrol whatever. We did a battalion daylight casualty seeking patrol once, and it was only one time that we did it. We'd done a raid the night before, and I very well remember the platoon commander, David Margetts he was given the option of going out under a barrage, or going out with a unit with a red flag, you know, the Red Cross flag. And he chose the Red Cross flag, and they went out with no weapons and did a sweep in broad daylight and came back again. I don't think they found anybody. But that was just another one-off occasion.
Chinese respected the
yes,
Red Cross.
Yes. There was no aggression at all. And another incident was because we were out there during the coronation, at the time of the coronation. One of the officers went out on a small special patrol and took out the helicopter landing strips. We used to have coloured strips that you put down to mark your helicopter landing places. And he went out and put E2R on the Chinese. He got a mention in dispatches for it, actually. And there it was in broad daylight, you know, it was darn good. But, no, I don't think anyone really enjoyed patrolling.
Thinking about the hazard of patrolling, what was it that concerned you most? Was it the risk of meeting the enemy under unfavourable circumstances, or the risk of losing your way and blundering into your own minefield?
I think it was all those things, which I think I've sort of covered. I think that, you know, you were in charge, you were responsible, you had the responsibility of getting your patrol together, taking them out, doing the job, and getting them back again, depending on the size or the role of the patrol at the time. And, you know, it was a headache, let's face it. And I think that you were probably... I think the fact that you might run into trouble and how do you deal with your casualties is probably the worst one. Certainly getting back again, as far as I was concerned, I mean, some people had probably better bumps of locality than I did, but, you know, once you were out there, you've got to think about how you were going to get back. But we never... people got lost, and I got lost, but you never, you know, unless you were very, very unfortunate, got completely lost. But even then, nothing much, you know, someone would have to come out and get you. But, you know, the whole responsibility, mainly because it was in the dark. That's about it, really. You know.
Roughly how often would you have to go out on a patrol?
That was a good question. It was, you see, we're divided between officers, sergeants, junior NCOs, corporals as well. And depending on the style of patrol, you could spread it around your platoon or your company. You had quite a number of people. So there'd be a kind of rota for you'd be out patrol tonight, I'd be out patrol tomorrow, so-and-so would be out patrol the next day. So you might not come round for a patrol once every week, 10 days. NCOs were used quite a lot for patrolling. Sergeants would take out an ambush patrol. And NCOs were often chosen for the snatch patrols and this kind of thing, you know. So it was very much the sergeant as well. So taken that you'd got three sergeants, you know, and several corporals, quite a lot of officers, it was, you know, probably you'd find you were one in four nights, that kind of thing.
Did you ever go on a raid?
I personally didn't go on a raid, but we had one raid, which was which preceded the Red Cross sweep. I don't think that was terribly successful. And we had planned a raid, a daylight raid, and it became so... Going back in history a bit, you see, we were... As I say, the feeling was that the war was going to come to an end. I mean, clearly nobody knew, but... You know, the signs were that the war was during our year there. And so there wasn't a great deal of point in being too aggressive. I think that could be misconstrued. We were aggressive in our defence. We were aggressive in dominating our area. And we were aggressive in a lot of ways. But I think that the value of any attack or any raid had to be very carefully balanced against, clearly, because they were daylight raids mainly, against losses, you know. And the last one I recall was planned for Sunday, and there was so much enemy activity before we, you know, because of our aggressive mortaring and shelling, of the point that we were meant to be attacking. It became abundantly obvious to the Chinese what was in store, and so they became equally aggressive, and so it was called off. So during the time that Wan Dia and I were there, I could be corrected in history, but I think it was two raids, probably three, one of which was called off.
You said that no one enjoyed going out on patrol. Did you find that there were some people in your platoon who were good at it, or much better at it than the others, who were naturally good patrollers?
I think they were all pretty much the same, because they'd all come in for, you know, patrolling activity of some stage, at some stage of some type, all the time. And so they were all as good as one another, really. No one really enjoyed it. I mean, I don't know, but I would doubt it that anyone really thought, God, lovely, I'm going out on patrol again tonight, whoopee. But I think everybody took it as it came. There it was, it had to be done, you know.
You mentioned this business of being out in the dark. Some people would regard the dark as being a form of protection if they're involved in a night patrol.
Yes, I think that's perfectly true, because obviously you wouldn't want to go and sit out in the daylight. One got used to doing everything in the dark. But it was a two-edged sword, if you see what I mean. Sure, it was a protection against being seen, but it was also, it had the problems of, you know, keeping control of your own patrol. Everything obviously becomes that much more difficult when it's in the dark, you know.
Did you find that your night vision improved as time went on?
I'm not sure. I think probably it may have done. Difficult to say. I think one got used to, as I say, used to working in the dark. And after you've been in your position for two or three days, you got to know the position of the trenches and things. So, you know, it was pretty good. I think you probably, yes, I think, you know, if you're working in the dark for quite a long time, you do get, your eyes become a little better. Something I've never really thought about, but, you know, it's something that one lived with. And as I say, you look forward to the new moon as well, or the full moon. That made such a lot of difference. But of course, it was 6 2/3. You could move about easier, more easily, but you could still be seen more easily.
What about the effect of rain? And
rain, same as anywhere else, except of course it would fill up your trenches, and you become, you know, got everywhere. You know, obviously there's a problem with drying your clothes.